This week's Sound Off is brought to you by Audible. You can use our Audible URL, audibletrial.com/solomonster, right now to sign up for a 30-day trial of the service and get yourself one free audiobook. So if you're a wrestling fan, you've got Brock Lesnar's book, Daniel Bryan's book, Chris Jericho, Shawn Michaels, Dusty Rhodes, Lex Luger, Hulk Hogan. There's a ton of wrestling books on there. And if you decide to cancel during the trial for any reason, you get to keep your free audiobook. And every time you use our URL, you're helping out the podcast. So audibletrial.com/solomonster for your free trial and audiobook right now.
Oh, yeah. What was it you said to me before? Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Trails, Hans.
It's business time, baby.
The Solomonster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the street.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
Who's that? You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Rest in peace, Alan Rickman played Hans Gruber in the original Die Hard movie. Still the greatest movie villain of all time. Too many people being taken away by cancer. It's just awful. 10 days until Lucha Underground Season 2 premieres January 27th on El Rey. I don't have El Rey, but I will find a way to watch this show. And if you've never seen it before, you are in for something special. I'm very much looking forward to that. This is episode 419 of the Solomonster Sounds Off here for Sunday, January 17, 2016. I am the Solomonster. We made the final cut in the Wrestling Radio Awards, second year in a row. You can now vote on the Show of the Year. There's a bunch of other categories. There's Broadcast Show of the Year. They want you to vote on Wrestler of the Year, Match of the Year. You can get the full ballot on WrestlingRadioAwards.com. It's the same process. You can vote once a day, every day. I don't know when the cutoff is, but I know the award show is on January 31st. So it's only a limited window here. We need your support. So if you want to vote for the Solomonster Sounds Off as the Show of the Year 2015, head on over to WrestlingRadioAwards.com. I think it's question number 4. You'll get the drop down. You can pick the sound off. I don't think it will let you submit the ballot unless you put the word skip or fill in. There's two boxes on the bottom for like interview of the year. I mean, if you have one, you can write it in. I mean, hell, maybe you could even write in the Booker T interview that we did on the sound off here a couple weeks ago. But you got to fill those boxes in. Click submit. You can vote once a day, every day. And any support, if you want to spread the link around, spread the word, that would be fantastic. Of course, we came away with the award last year, so it would be kind of cool to repeat. I want to thank Zach Holker in the Facebook group, as always, each year. He handles our Royal Rumble pool. He does a fantastic job. It's a lot of work. And Zach, if you're listening, you're getting a Sound Off shirt on me. I'm buying. It's the least I could do. So send me a message with your address, your size, and which shirt you want. And I will make sure I get that out to you ASAP. The numbers have been issued in the pool, so if you signed up and don't have a number yet or don't know what your number is, go to the Facebook group. They have been posted. I stickied it on top, although after this show goes up, I may unsticky it. We have a record number of people this year, almost 600 people. 19 pools. 19! It's insane. Probably more. We have some spillover into a possible 20th pool, so by the time you listen to this, we may have 20 and 21. So there's still time to sign up, at least a few more days. Head on over to the private group on Facebook. I, myself, drew number 20 in this year's pool, so whoever you are, number 20, you better not disappoint me the way Ryback did a few years back. I also want to thank Lito Davids, big fan of the show. He met Rey Mysterio at a show over in the UK this weekend, and he snagged a photo with him wearing one of our shirts. Apparently, Ray recognized it, and Lito tweeted out the photo and said Ray would make a great guest on the show. Fuck yes, he would, especially with this WCW countdown we're in the middle of doing. I mean, you know he's going to be on that list at least once. So if you'd like to see Rey Mysterio on the show, I don't know how active he is on Twitter, but tag him on there, at Rey Mysterio, and let him know. And if there's enough support, maybe that'll get his attention. I also had two columns posted this week on two different websites. You could tell I've been very busy, and we're only halfway through January. I have a story up on the Resurrection of Jake the Snake documentary on WrestlingInc.com. That was a one-shot for them. And my normal column on TJRWrestling.net went up this week. A look at the career of Mark Henry. And expanding a little bit on my prediction that Henry will, in my opinion, win the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal at WrestleMania in his home state of Texas. Talk about why I think that needs to happen. So check out those two columns and leave comments. If you like what you hear every week, you can please make a PayPal donation or consider doing so on thesolemonster.com. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname. $30 or more, you get the nickname and a shout-out for your business or podcast or what have you. So I want to say thank you this week to Chuck Lunatic Lentz. And I want Chuck to know that, you know, his support month after month, he's one of those names you hear pretty consistently. I just want him to know his support does not go unnoticed. I want to say thank you. Russell the Muscle, the Marietta Mahler, Alexandra Mata, Deadpool James Herrera, there's another one of our recurring donators, Ostentatious Alan Carter, Angel Eyes Amber Pittman, the Saudi Prince, Abdulaziz Gambi, Dream Chaser Chauncey Curry, John Loose Cannon Lopez, Rudy Son of Adonis, Caceres, Christopher Hand Grenade Hicks, All Action, Reginald Davis II, who is celebrating 24 years on this earth today, so happy birthday, dude. Tyler the Boss Williams, who runs a closed group on Facebook called All Wrestling Community. If you want to join, you can visit facebook.com/groups/All Wrestling Community. And lastly here, Too Sexy Tommy Sequero, who runs Haven Health Group, the leading provider and premier in skilled nursing and physical therapy services throughout all of Arizona. You can check him out online at havenhg.com. You see, wrestling fans come from all walks of life. We'll do the next match in the WCW countdown. This will be match number 5 this week, After the Mailbag, one of the all-time great Nitro matches. Somber, but a great match nonetheless. I did get a chance to watch Tanahashi and Okada from Wrestle Kingdom, finally. A great match, but I have to say, I think I enjoyed Styles and Nakamura more. I would have to give them match of the night honors. But, you know, you have two matches like that back-to-back on the same show. That's going to be a tough show to top. I think we may have peaked already for this year. Speaking of Nakamura, he was stripped by New Japan this week of his Intercontinental title. It sounds like that was a New Japan decision, not a case where WWE wasn't going to let him drop the title. This seems to be all New Japan. This is what they wanted to do. And so the championship instead will be decided between Kenny Omega and a mystery opponent on February 14th at their New Beginnings show. Nakamura's last match is going to be January 30th at Korakuen Hall. He's teaming up with Okada and Ishii against Tanahashi, Shibata, and Goto. He is then going to be reporting to the Performance Center next month. And, you know, if he's not going to debut until at least the end of next month, or maybe not even until March, I see no reason to rush him onto TV. Yeah, they're going to have most of the WrestleMania card already locked in by that point. I think as cool as it would be to see him in NXT, and I wouldn't hate on it if he went there first, I think it would be cooler. Because it's not like he needs to go to NXT. I think it would be cooler to save his debut for that post-WrestleMania Raw show. You know, they've had new people debut on that show over the years. Brock returned on that show the night after WrestleMania in Miami. They're going to have a big international presence in the building that night. If any Raw crowd would react huge to Nakamura, that would be the one. And you only get one chance to make a good first impression. I think the idea of him walking out there and getting this monstrous reaction so that even the people that don't know who he is, they know, oh shit, this guy is somebody, and all of a sudden you've piqued their interest. This guy would be a star his first night if he walked out on stage in front of those people. You know, and the more I think about that, the more I like that idea, so I hope that's what they do. AJ Styles wrestled Zack Sabre Jr. at a Revolution Pro show on Saturday night. There is a video online that popped up of Styles thanking the fans after the match. He was being showered in chants of Royal Rumble, and you deserve it. And, you know, I saw the video myself, and then I see people on Twitter saying, oh, AJ said he's going to be in the Royal Rumble. Even, I think, the title of the video said AJ Styles announces he's going to be in the Royal Rumble or something. No, he didn't. No, he didn't. He never said that. He reacted to the fans. He said if they have a spot open, he would kick everybody's ass in the Rumble match. That's what he said. He teased it. He certainly teased the idea of being in it, but he never outright said he was going to be in the Royal Rumble. So I expect he is going to be. I would be very surprised if he wasn't. And I know I've seen other reports that say he was absolutely supposed to be a surprise in the Rumble, but then it got leaked, and so you know how Vince McMahon could be, and maybe now he won't be in the Rumble. I think that would be completely idiotic, just because people know, oh, let's not put him in there. I mean, that's like what happened at the Rumble, what was it, like 6-7 years ago, when it was supposed to be Christian coming back to the company from TNA, and he was going to attack Jeff Hardy and feud with Jeff Hardy going into WrestleMania, but then it leaked and everybody knew, and so what did they do? They had Matt turn on his brother, which always works so well, and Christian was, you know, relegated to ECW, you know, because people knew. Gives a fuck, people knew. You know, if it's a great idea, you go with it. Who cares? Who knows? Yeah, it would have been cool if they could have kept this a surprise like they did the Dudleys. Remember when the Dudleys came back? That was cool. It's very hard, though, to keep surprises these days. Doesn't mean that you just, well, we can't do it now. You know? I mean, the fact, if AJ Styles is not in the Royal Rumble match at this point, WWE has been teasing this shit themselves on their own fucking website. If he's not in that Rumble match, that will be a disappointment. You want to let the fans down? Don't put him in the Rumble match. You know, that's the situation that they now find themselves in. But as far as what AJ said at the Rev Pro show, he didn't actually say he was going to be in there. I don't want to, you know, put words in his mouth. I think people are getting a little ahead of themselves. He certainly teased it, but he didn't say he was going to be. In fact, he said, I don't have a contract with them right now. He outright said that. And that's very possible. I'm sure he has an offer. Doesn't mean he signed. Sting has been announced as the first inductee into the WWE Hall of Fame, class of 2016. Ric Flair is likely going to be the one to do the induction, as he should. I mean, he was Sting's greatest rival. And Sting's had a lot of great rivals. You know, Vader being the other one that comes to mind. But Flair has to be the one. I mean, it's the most appropriate person for the induction. It was that one match with Flair in 88 that put Sting on the map. And I think Luger did the induction for him in TNA. I know he and Luger are still friends, but Flair is the only choice for this. And with this, by the way, Sting becomes the first person to be inducted into both the WWE and the TNA Hall of Fame. For whatever that's worth. Little interesting fact there. And he's going into the WWE Hall of Fame second. He actually went into the TNA one first. So, a lot of speculation. Is this it? Is this confirmation that Sting is done as an in-ring performer? Not necessarily. Not necessarily. Just because he's going into the Hall of Fame, lots of people have wrestled matches in WWE after they've been inducted. Moolah, Snuka, Hogan, Flair, Piper, Steamboat, even Bret Hart. So that alone does not necessarily mean anything. And when I did the prediction show, I said that Sting, DDP, the Freebirds, Jushin Liger, and Lemmy from Motorhead would all go into the Hall of Fame. Those are my predictions. The Sting one was kind of obvious. The other ones, we'll see how that shakes out. I noticed, though, I was having a conversation with somebody, and I noticed I was missing a female inductee. So I just want to add one more name to all of this if they're going to put a woman in there this year. And I'm going to throw Sable's name onto that list. I think that if they have a female inductee this year, my prediction is that it's going to be Sable. I know she didn't do a lot of wrestling, she wasn't particularly great at it or anything, but as a character, as a draw, as a performer, in the Attitude Era, the whole Monday Night War period, Sable was, I mean, I don't know if you want to rank them top 10, top 5, but in terms of the big attractions on the different shows, Sable was up there. I mean, she wasn't, you know, above Austin or anything, but Sable was a big draw for WWE during the Attitude Era. She became a very big star. And she was as much a part of that era as anybody. And so for that alone, I could see her going into the Hall of Fame. Obviously, she's married to Brock. So I guess there's kind of a little bit of a connection there. I don't know what her relationship is with the company. She had some rocky points with them over the years. But I could absolutely see Sable going in, and she would be my pick. I would love to see Demolition finally go into the Hall of Fame also. But if the Freebirds are going in, and I think they are, I don't know that they want to add another tag team. But they should do it soon, because those guys, especially Axe, you know, they're not getting any younger. And I still resent the fact that they waited so long to put Savage in that he couldn't be there to give his own speech. And on the subject of the Hall of Fame, one more note here before we get to Raw. TMZ had a report this week that Sunny is selling her WWE Hall of Fame ring on eBay And the initial asking price, $3,000. $3,000. I don't know what it's up to now. I can't find a link to the campaign. Now, to be fair, Sunny is not the first person to sell their Hall of Fame ring. Doesn't make her a bad person. She claims it has nothing to do with any of the DUI problems that she's had. She's been in court. She's got a lot of shit going on. She says, nope, has nothing to do with any of that. She said, it's time to let go of the past, and selling my ring is the right way to get back on track. That's what she told TMZ. Great. She can start with her Twitter handle. Her Twitter handle is at WWEHOFRSunny. Since she wants to make a clean break and all, let's see if she changes it. As of right now, she has not. Monday Night Raw was live from New Orleans, Louisiana this past week. I'm warning you now, I don't have a lot of positive things to say about this show. The Raw Instapoll that went up on Twitter, almost 1,400 votes, 37% thumbs up, 63% thumbs down. I think that says it all right there. They spent the entire show promoting a one-versus-all match with Roman Reigns against the entire roster, which really just turned out to be Kevin Owens. And normally I'd say, you know, hey, that's for the better. But the match was unbelievably boring. I get that chin locks are, you know, for Kevin Owens now what they used to be for Randy Orton. They're sort of his thing. But the entire match was practically one long chin lock. And I'm sorry, 3 hours in? I don't think so. I started dozing off. So let's put this match in a chin lock, and I'll come back to it later. We had Titus O'Neil beating Stardust again. Titus grabbed a small white child after the match and picked him up. Kid looked terrified. Stardust took out Titus's leg and then screeched or hissed or coughed up a hairball. I don't know. I'm not sure which, but he left. Now, remember this. Keep this in mind, okay? This would have been Cesaro's feud had he not gotten hurt. He got hurt and they slotted Titus in there, which I guess sucks for Darren Young. But this would have been Cesaro's spot. So my theory is, you know, perhaps he was told in advance what the plans were for him here in this feud. And, you know, maybe he rammed his shoulder into a brick wall on purpose to injure himself. That's what I would have done. Jericho came out. He tried to get the crowd to chant Rudy Tooty Booty again at New Day. He can fuck right off with that chant. The Usos wrestled New Day again. And I, you know, watched this and I just pondered, as I do weekly now, why Jason Jordan and Chad Gable or Big Kaz and Enzo Amore are not on this show already. Because we get the same matches with the same two teams over and over and over again. And the Usos are very good. But at some point, you need some variety here, right? You got to spice things up with this tag team division. You've got at least two teams down in developmental right now. I can't even call it developmental. You've got two teams down on NXT who I think are, you know, ready for prime time. They could be put on Raw tomorrow, and I think they'd fit right in. They'd fit like a glove. Very entertaining. That's the thing about those two teams. They're not just good teams. They're very entertaining. Kaz and Enzo, they're more shtick than anything else. I mean, they're fine. They're okay as wrestlers, but that's not really their thing. It's about their charisma. It's about their whole pre-match shtick. They could be like a modern-day kind of New Age Outlaws kind of act. I don't think anybody ever said, man, those New Age Outlaws, they're one of the greatest technical tag teams in wrestling history. No, they were fine. They were okay. But with them, it was their shtick. It was their charisma. It was their comedy. It was their personality. That's what really, you know, made them so popular. And I think Kaz and Enzo could be that same kind of team. Jordan and Gable, I mean, the upside for those two, it's exciting to think about, except when you think about what usually happens to these guys when they get called up. And I'm going to talk about that a little bit later on when I talk about Tyler Breeze, because I got a lot I want to get off my chest about that. So when you think about the reality of it, it's like, oh man, as great as they are, probably isn't going to translate to the main roster because they won't be given a fair shake. Jordan might, because he looks like $1 million. Chad Gable's going to have to fight and scratch and claw because he's too small. So I do fear for those guys, but it's a weird situation. Like, I'm watching this show every week. I'm dedicating 3 hours to it. I don't watch the Hulu version. I don't fast forward through stuff. I watch the show so that I can talk about it, the good and the bad, and because I want to like the show. I want to like the show. And most weeks they make it very difficult to, even when they don't mean to. Sometimes it's just fucking dull. And you get tired of seeing the same faces over and over again. You need some variety. And the way I look at it, we still have time between now and WrestleMania. We got a good, 2.5 months? There's still time between now and then to introduce a couple of new teams. By the time WrestleMania rolls around, you could have a solid Fatal 4-Way. You know, you can have the New Day and the Usos, and you could have Kaz and Enzo and Jordan and Gable. Or maybe it's a different team. They have time to introduce some new faces between now and then and get them on that card. I'd like to see them try. Jericho stole Xavier's trombone outside the ring because Jericho was in the Usos' corner. He broke the trombone, and Woods sold this the way that I sold it when I found out Raw was moving to 3 hours. He was just devastated. And by the way, did I mention this crowd was comatose throughout the entire show? This was New Orleans, a city that, as I think back to my time there, I tweeted this actually before I started recording. I was just thinking about it. I was going through some old photos, my time there for WrestleMania a few years ago. I had so much fun. That was actually my first time ever in New Orleans. And I was surrounded by crazy wrestling fans for days on end. Wrestling fans just invaded Bourbon Street. You know, we had a house on Bourbon Street that whole weekend. It was something else. And I think back to that and I'm like, I want to go back. I need an excuse to go back. I want them to bring WrestleMania back to New Orleans, right? It's a fun city. And these people in this building did not care about anything except Brock Lesnar. Brock Lesnar was supposed to be on the show, and they teased it all night long. They saved him for the very end. That's all they cared about. They waited the entire night just to see Brock Lesnar. And Kalisto's win, they did react big to that, although, you know, that was all for nothing. We'll get to that in a second. JBL got in the ring to introduce Sting as the first Hall of Fame inductee this year. They aired a nice video package for him, lots of celebrities talking about what a big fan they were of Sting growing up. I'm sure this befuddled Vince McMahon since he wasn't a WWF guy. Oh, how could they know who this guy is? Even LeBron James tweeted that Sting was his favorite growing up. I would laugh the way they booked Sting pretty much for all of last year if this was all just a giant swerve and they end up inducting the singer Sting into the Hall of Fame instead. Just to stick it to WCW, you know? Because they love to do that. I mean, just look at WrestleMania last year. They love to stick it to WCW, you know, which they own, by the way. They own WCW. And WCW has been dead for 15 years. But they never miss a chance to stick it to WCW, like the war is still going on. So then we had an upset. Kalisto pinned Alberto Del Rio to win the United States Championship. Crowd loved it. I loved it, because finally, they're getting behind somebody new, right? That's what it looked like. They're getting behind a new guy. And Kalisto is very good. I mean, he's very talented. I think after that Salida del Sol, he pulled off a TLC. He opened up a lot of eyes. The guy deserved a chance. They put the title on him. And then the very next night, he drops it right back to Del Rio at the SmackDown tapings. With an assist, of course, from Bad News Barrett. But really, I mean, aside from that, it's not like Barrett really did anything. Barrett's not getting physical at all. He's still hurt. You'll notice when they have him out there, he's not really taking bumps. He's not doing moves. He's not doing anything. All he did was pull Del Rio out of the way of a tope. Kalisto crashed and burned, and then Del Rio put him in the armbar. And like a fucking prelim guy, not only did he tap out, which is fine, he tapped out immediately. Like as soon as he locked the armbar in, he just was furiously tapping. Now, it is possible they will have a rematch at the Royal Rumble. And who knows, maybe they'll do a ladder match, right? One of the greatest Rumble matches of all time was the ladder match in 01 between Jericho and Benoit. If they do a ladder match, you got Kalisto in there, I'd be okay with that. But why beat the guy right away? If that's the case, why not let him hold it until the Rumble? You want to put the belt back on Del Rio? Fine, do it there. Why do you need to take it right back away from him? To keep Del Rio strong for when John Cena comes back? I mean, really, come on. I mean, I'm trying, you know, like, I'm talking about the Rumble possibility here. I'm trying to look at this in a positive way. If it were me, okay, here's what I do. I put the belt on Kalisto like they did, right? I agree with that. Great, great move. The first real challenger I have for him is Neville. Okay, Del Rio deserves a rematch. Send him to the Rumble. Put him in a ladder match. Let Kalisto win again. None of this even Steven bullshit. He beats the guy a second time to solidify that this was not a fluke. He's the real deal. So he wins. Now Del Rio moves on to something else. And heading into WrestleMania, you could build a program between Kalisto and Neville. How fun would that be to watch? You remember Neville, right? The guy who had John Cena beaten for that United States title at one time on Raw? Which, by the way, there's your hook right there. Neville could be like, hey, you know, he has as much of a claim as anybody to being the U.S. champion. That was never followed up on. And so, you know, he wants a shot at the title. It could be a friendly, competitive thing. You know, one guy doesn't have to turn on the other or anything like that. There's your hook. That's all you need. But yeah, that Neville guy, you may have forgotten about him. I mean, look, I hate to pull him away from that fantastic program he's got going with The Miz. You remember that one, right? The one that I said had the potential to at least be entertaining. I was willing to give it a shot. Miz said, oh, he wanted Neville to teach him how to speak with a British accent so that he could become the next James Bond, and then was promptly dropped from television a week later, and we never heard about it again. You remember that storyline, right? Is it any wonder why the fans on this show, at the buildings, consistently sit on their hands every single week and don't give three shits about 90% of the people on this roster? Can you blame them? The best thing on this show was Becky Lynch. This was a breakout performance for her, and she didn't even have a match. She didn't wrestle. Charlotte was supposed to wrestle Brie Bella. Becky ran in before the match started. She attacked Charlotte. Referees had to pull her away. The entire time, she's shouting at Charlotte, I'm taking your title and I'm taking your arm. Taking your title and taking your arm. Those are the two main points. I love that. I thought that was such a great line. And then backstage, it was JoJo or whoever it was, you know, sticks a microphone in Becky's face. And she cuts a passionate promo about how Charlotte had promised her that, you know, she would never use her famous father to advance her career. And that was a lie. And she doesn't have anybody to help her like Charlotte does. But that's okay. She's always been on her own. She's going to make Charlotte tap out and take her Divas title. This was great stuff. This was straightforward. This was real passion and emotion. Somebody was actually pissed off about something on this show for a fucking change. Maybe that's why I liked it so much. It's absolutely worth going on YouTube or wherever they have this and finding it if you didn't see it, because this was really good stuff. And I have to say, you know, what they've done lately with Charlotte and Becky and that whole storyline is very basic. But all I ever wanted was for them to actually give something to the women to sink their teeth into. None of this Total Divas bullshit. Come up with an actual story. Come up with an actual story with a good guy and a bad guy and let it play out on TV. And you know what? That's what they've done. Charlotte is just perfect in the heel role. It suits her much better. Becky, like I said, this was a breakout performance for her. And, you know, Sasha being hurt and being off TV for a little while probably also is a blessing for Becky, because it gives her the chance to kind of show her stuff and shine a spotlight on her. I assume ultimately the feud is going to be Charlotte and Sasha heading into WrestleMania. Or who knows, maybe they end up doing a three-way and work Becky in there somehow. But this is really good stuff, and I want to give them props for that. It took them a while. Maybe they lucked into it. You know, it's so bad. Like, I want to give them credit, but like, I'm so hesitant to do so, because I feel the minute I do, they're going to go ahead and do something to fuck it all up. You know, but I will give them credit. Right now, so far, so good. I'm enjoying the Charlotte Becky stuff. So, back to the main event. Half an hour before Raw ended, I figured out exactly what they were doing. I tweeted out, Brock ends up helping Reigns, but then he drops him with an F5 to end the show. And that's exactly what happened. All the evil lumberjacks eventually ran in to gang up on Roman Reigns. Maybe they got tired of watching Kevin Owens in his chin lock, so they ran in, and Brock's music hit. The Wyatts were out there. The Wyatts were on the outside with all the other heels, but they never actually got anywhere near Lesnar, which was interesting. He killed the New Day. He killed Kevin Owens with a suplex, killed Del Rio, killed Sheamus, picked up Reigns off the mat, gave him an F5. And, you know, when somebody asked me a few weeks ago, what might be next for Brock? You know, when Brock comes back, what are they going to have him doing? I said, you know what? I could see it being the Wyatt family. I floated that as an idea. They all gang up to eliminate Brock from the Royal Rumble match. And then Brock goes through each of them one by one until he gets Bray at WrestleMania. I mean, at Fastlane, it sounds like Brock's going to have a match. So unless they're going to do Lesnar-Reigns at Fastlane, and that's not going to be the WrestleMania main event like I think it is, what other match would there be for Brock? Well, again, if they all gang up and eliminate him from the Rumble and they take away his chance to wrestle for the championship of WrestleMania. You could have Brock wrestle some kind of gauntlet. You've got four Wyatt family members. You keep Bray on the outside. You have Lesnar go 3-on-1. I know the Wyatt family has been, you know, they haven't exactly been booked as strongly as maybe they should have. I mean, they went through the feud with the ECW guys. They got a bunch of big wins. They kind of rehabbed them a little bit. So Lesnar running through all the members except Bray would not necessarily reflect well on the Wyatt family, but it's Brock Lesnar, so I think people could excuse that. Brock Lesnar is a machine who can destroy anybody, okay? Let's say he runs through all the other members at Fastlane, and then he gets his match with Bray at WrestleMania. I could see that being a direction that they go in. I don't necessarily want to see that. Personally, I still stick with my idea, which is that Reigns and Lesnar, part two for the championship at WrestleMania. And then whatever match Triple H is going to be in, let's say against Rock, you get a big double main event out of it. I like that idea much better.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
Kevin Owens confronted Sami Zayn after his match with Tommaso Ciampa at the NXT house show in Milwaukee this weekend. Owens made it sound like this building, I don't know the name of the building where they were, but I guess that building had special meaning to him. He had wanted to wrestle in that building in his last independent match, but it didn't work out. This was supposed to be his day off. So it could have been just as simple as, hey, I would love to work that building and do an angle with Sammy, and he went and he did it. May not mean anything long term, but I'm holding out hope that this is a sign that something I've been asking for months and predicting that they would do and should do for months, which is that Sami Zayn perhaps eliminates Kevin Owens. Maybe he's in the Rumble as a surprise. And not being called up full time, because I would expect Sami's probably going to challenge for the championship against Finn Balor WrestleMania weekend. But maybe he's in the Rumble and he eliminates Kevin Owens. And that's the initial spark for something between the two of them at WrestleMania. I had wanted Owens just to hold on to the Intercontinental title and then bring up Sami full time in the Rumble. Built to a championship match between them at WrestleMania, maybe to open the show. Doesn't look like that's going to happen, but you could still do something between Owens and Zayn at Mania if they wanted to. I'm holding out hope. I think it was Steen who told Generico once on the Indies, we are destined to do this forever. So, seems like the next logical step in their feud would be to have a WrestleMania match at some point. They had a new announce team for NXT this week. I hope it's the permanent one because I like them a lot. It was Tom Phillips and Corey Graves. A two-man booth. None of this three-man bullshit. And guess what? They were fine. They didn't fall apart without Byron Saxton out there. In fact, they were better without him. And Corey Graves, I thought Corey Graves was great on this show. He has taken to the Jesse Ventura, you know, pragmatic heel role very nicely. I very much enjoy what I've heard from Corey Graves recently. William Regal made his NXT return as the GM for the first time since neck surgery. He introduced Sami Zayn, who himself was making his return to Full Sail for the first time since Kevin Owens put him out of action in May. Crowd sang the Olé song. They chanted Welcome Back. He said he's back to become the first ever two-time NXT champion. That brought out Samoa Joe, who is just on fucking fire right now. Go listen to this guy on the microphone here in this segment. Just great stuff. You know, it's not just his work in the ring. It's not just a Samoa Joe match. His promo work. I mean, how is this guy not the top heel on Monday Night Raw right now? How? Tell me. I don't understand. Why is he still down here? Especially with all the guys that have gone down with injury. Why is he still down here? It doesn't make any sense to me. He threatened Sammy. He told him to leave the ring. That brought out Baron Corbin. I was hoping that Corbin would tell Joe to go back to Ring of Honor, like he told Apollo Crews at TakeOver, but sadly he didn't. He referred to himself as the uncrowned NXT champion. And Joe told Corbin he's not even in the conversation since he choked him out in Brooklyn. And anyway, this all led to Corbin attacking Zayn from behind after Joe had already left the ring. We're going to get a three-way in 2 weeks to determine the new number one contender. I believe those are the tapings that I'll be at. At least I hope so. Those are not at Full Sail. They'll be at a bigger arena. They announced the winners of the NXT Year-End Awards on WWE.com. We had Tag Team of the Year, Kaz and Enzo. I don't think Jordan and Gable were even in the voting, or else I would have, you know, voted for them. But Kaz and Enzo won that. Female competitor of the year was Bayley. Male competitor of the year was Finn Balor. Takeover of the year was NXT TakeOver Brooklyn. Match of the year was Bayley against Sasha from Brooklyn. And overall competitor of the year, Finn Balor. So no major surprises there. I pretty much am okay with everything that they announced. Tommaso Ciampa submitted Danny Burch. Ciampa has looked damn impressive in all of the outings I've seen him in on NXT. Now, I don't think he has a full-time deal with them, but if he doesn't, he should. He deserves it. And I wasn't sold on him at first. You know, when he came in with Johnny Gargano, I heard a lot of great things about Gargano, and Gargano's very impressive, and I wasn't really paying as much attention to Tommaso, but he has converted me. He has opened my eyes. Dash and Dawson beat the Ascension with the Shatter Machine. Ascension is still over like hell at Full Sail. The Ascension is in this weird purgatory right now where they don't win on the main roster. They barely even appear on TV. But when they go back to NXT, they're like these returning legends whose job it is to put over the newer guys. So they just never win. They just kind of bounce back and forth. They don't really do much of anything. Backstage, Nia Jax was told by the trainer that she is not medically cleared for the Women's Battle Royal because I guess the front face lock or whatever that Bayley put her in back at TakeOver all those weeks ago, she still has bruising or I don't know. So she was very upset that she wasn't going to be allowed to compete in the Battle Royal, and all I could say is she should talk to Daniel Bryan. The struggle is real. Eva Marie stood behind her and acted happy the whole time that Nia couldn't be in the match. We have the Drifter, Elias Sampson. He pinned Corey Hollis with a neck breaker. Sampson is just duller than dishwater with this gimmick. This is just Boar City. And he freaks me out with how much he looks like Damian Sandow. Here's an idea for you. Why not just bring Damian Sandow to NXT since he never appears on TV anyway and build him up as a contender for the NXT title that the fans can get behind? There's an idea for you. I mean, they were doing that for a while. They would take a main roster guy and bring them down, and I was a little concerned because they were bringing down Titus and Swagger, and it's like, all right, you're going to just bring all these guys down. That's not cool either. But you look at a guy like Tyson Kidd. Tyson Kidd, like, reinvigorated his whole career by coming down to NXT. He was fantastic. And Zack Ryder, you know, I don't care either way, but, you know, at least he's got something going on. Sandow, they're literally doing nothing with him. Absolutely nothing. So what do you have to lose? Send him down there. You know the fans are going to be into him. And, you know, let him get over a little bit. Let him have something to do. So they had a battle royal with all the women to determine the number one contender to wrestle Bayley for the title in 2 weeks. What I loved about this was they did backstage promos with all the participants earlier in the day that aired throughout the show. Old school Royal Rumble style. That and Liv Morgan is just gorgeous. It's weird. Like, I was never that into Oksana. And yet, Liv Morgan could pass as a dead ringer for Oksana, facially. But I find her more attractive than Oksana. And another thing they have in common is they both have foreign accents. One's from Lithuania and the other's from New Jersey. Another reason why NXT is superior to the main roster. We don't have any of that pussy bullshit here where the women are eliminated through the ropes. Here it was over-the-top rope elimination, as it should be. Now, granted, Liv Morgan did nearly kill Cameron trying to powerbomb her out of the ring, which she botched the first time, and the second time she tried it, Alexa Bliss dumped both of them out. It's a miracle they didn't break their necks. I forgot to mention, though, just before we go any further, the best part, which came before this. So, Eva Marie is in the Battle Royal. She gets an entrance. And right in the middle of her entrance, it gets cut off for Asuka's entrance. And so you get this great shot of Eva standing in the aisle with Asuka's mask from her Titantron in the background. And out comes Asuka, who shoulder checks Eva from behind, because Eva, you know, she continues walking, and now Asuka's walking, and Asuka's faster than she is. And Asuka just, you know, shoulder checks her, because Eva's taking too fucking long to walk down to the ring. I mean, words don't do this justice. You need to see this for yourself. And then watch Asuka kick Eva's head off her shoulders in the first spot of the match. That took Eva out until the finish. So Asuka, let's skip ahead here. Asuka's got pretty much everybody else she's gotten rid of. She's like the last one in there. Eva runs in from behind. Everybody's supposed to have forgotten that she was outside. Eva runs in, dumps out Asuka, which, had WWE not went and spoiled the outcome of this match for me on their own fucking Twitter account, I would have been furious. Because, you know, a second title shot for Eva. She already had one. She lost. Second title shot, you know she's winning the title. She's not losing twice to Bayley. So if she gets that rematch at some point, she's winning the championship. Thankfully, Carmella had also been knocked out of the ring, but not eliminated. And the crowd was so focused on booing the shit out of Eva Marie. They were so upset that they had forgotten about Carmella, who snuck up behind Eva, dumped her out, and won the Battle Royal. Carmella has never gotten a reaction like the one she did here. You would think that she was the most popular star in all of NXT. These people lost their minds when she dumped that woman out of the ring. It could have been Larry Fitzgerald in Green Bay dumping Eva out of the ring, and it wouldn't have mattered. They still would have cheered him like crazy. And I have to say, you know, they picked their spots very well with Eva. I love the way they've used her so far. I still have no interest at all in seeing her with the championship, you know, but I have to give them props on that, you know, for what they do with her. They've used her expertly so far. Bayley ran out to hug Carmella. The two of them are best friends on Breaking Ground. And speaking of Breaking Ground, this is where I go into rant mode. I watched the finale, and this is not a rant about Breaking Ground. It's a good show. But I watched the finale where Triple H announces in front of everybody at the last talent meeting that they show on there that Tyler Breeze, he calls Tyler Breeze to the front of the room, and he announces that he's finally getting the big call up to the main roster after all these years. And everybody claps and cheers, and you really get the impression that Tyler Breeze is a very well-liked, well-respected veteran of that NXT locker room. People are genuinely happy for him. Breeze says a few words, heartfelt words. It's all so gratifying. And then I remember what they've actually done with the man since his demotion. I'm going to call it a demotion, is really what it was. Maybe not in pay, but it's a demotion. And I think about what has happened to him in the last 3 months, and it makes me angry. It actually makes me very angry. There was an item in this week's Wrestling Observer, I'm sure a lot of you have already seen it, or heard about it, that Triple H genuinely wanted Breeze to be protected when he got called up. He saw Tyler Breeze kind of on the same level as a Dolph Ziggler, which probably dooms the guy anyway. But then Vince McMahon suddenly decided, you know what, I'm not sold on the guy. And boom, killed his push dead. And you don't need a website or a dirt sheet or insider information. Now, how do you know this? How do I know this? Because I have two functioning fucking eyeballs. That's how I know this. Have you not watched television in the last 2 months? Have you seen what they were doing with him? And now the fact they're not doing a goddamn thing with the guy? I don't need anybody to tell me that Vince McMahon has given up on the guy. I can tell myself. His entrance, which is the best part of his act, they've cut that out. I can't even remember the last time they gave him a full entrance on TV. They broke him and Summer Rae up for absolutely no good reason. It's not like, hey, you know, we have a better idea for him, or hey, we have a better idea for her. No, it's more like, hey, we don't know what the hell to do with either one of them, so why not just break them up? And so Tyler Breeze now wrestles on Main Event, or Superstars, I forgot which, I mean, who the fuck even cares, it's all the same. And he beats Jack Swagger, this was 2 weeks ago, I think, he beats Jack Swagger, only for Swagger to then beat him right back the very next week. Good ol' Even Steven. Even Steven with Jack Swagger. That's when you know your career has hit the skids. The guy never even had a chance. I don't care what you think of the gimmick. Not everybody was a fan of the gimmick. But he deserved a chance. 5 years he spent in developmental. 5 years. He was this close from getting cut before he came up with the whole Tyler Breeze shtick. Finally catches fire. He kills it in every big match they put him in. On TakeOver, on just the regular NXT TV show, he was getting main events. Killed it every single time. He gets the call, and 3 months later, he's done. 3 months. It took Vince McMahon 3 months to decide this guy didn't have it when he spent 5 years in their developmental system. There's a disconnect there. Why even bother having a developmental system if the only guy whose opinion really matters doesn't pay any attention to it? I actually have sympathy for Triple H in this case. Not just Tyler Breeze. I feel bad for Triple H. Because you got to know, you know, he develops a connection with these guys. He watches them from the very beginning as they grow and get better. And he pushes them and he sees, you know, what it means to them. And it's such a big deal when they get that phone call. Or they get pulled aside and said, hey, you're going to be on the main roster. You're going to be on Monday Night Raw. And I think he genuinely cares and wants to see these guys succeed. I'm sure in a perfect world, he would want every single NXT person to be successful. And that's not going to happen. But it's one thing if an NXT guy gets called up and he sucks. He can't hang. He gets hurt. He gets in trouble. He screws himself over somehow. That's one thing. We're not even talking about that. We're talking about guys that don't even have a chance. They don't have a chance from day one. So how does that make somebody like Triple H feel? And it's not like, what can he do? What can he say? So I have as much sympathy for him as I do for Tyler Breeze. Tyler Breeze is not the first, and he ain't going to be the last. And that's the real shameful part about it. Ring of Honor came to Philadelphia for their tapings this past week, which made the crowd even more disappointing. They weren't loud for much of anything on this show. I'm just sitting there going like, come on, Philly. I mean, was this like the end of a marathon taping or something? I mean, show some life. You have the All Night Express beating Roppongi Vice. Rocky Romero, by the way, he is staying in New Japan for at least another 2 years. WWE had supposedly been after him for a player-coach type position for NXT. Bad Luck Fale also re-signed with New Japan. Tama Tonga, he's another member of the Bullet Club. He claims he's still a free agent. He can end up anywhere. So we'll see what happens there. You know, he apparently lives in Florida, Tama Tonga does, and travels to Japan several times a year. So he's already in Florida. Unless NXT is offering him a lot less money, that might make more sense for him. The Kingdom came out for a promo. Adam Cole was, before I talk about what Adam Cole said, Matt Taven. Matt Taven came out on crutches. He tore his ACL and his MCL at Final Battle. Only a couple of minutes into their match. Somehow managed to finish the match. He had surgery. He is not expected back for anywhere from 9 to 12 months. Could be out an entire year. And in the Observer this week, they quoted his surgeon as saying he has never in all of his medical career seen a meniscus rupture that bad. And he just could not comprehend how Matt Taven finished the match. So between Taven's injury and you Mike Bennett and Maria, who are, of course, now in TNA, the Kingdom appears to be dead. And so maybe that's why Adam Cole came out here. He took him to task in his promo. He blamed them for being losers at Final Battle, unlike himself, who was a winner. We had Red Dragon came out. Kyle O'Reilly wanted to get Adam Cole in the worst way. Security was holding him back. And then we had the Bucks came out. Nigel McGuinness, who is, of course, filling in for Steve Corino on commentary, he's also the matchmaker in ROH. He stands up from the announce desk. He says, all right, here's what we're going to do. And he announced a Philadelphia street fight, a three-way between Red Dragon, the Kingdom, and the Young Bucks, which sounds quite awesome for next week's main event. The new ROH Tag Team Champions, War Machine, beat the House of Truths, Donovan Dijak, and Joey J. Diesel Daddio. It's like, good grief. That sounds like a PayPal nickname I would give to someone. I'm pretty sure I've come up with PayPal nicknames better than that. War Machine won, and Truth Martini blamed the loss on Dijak, who was then attacked by J. Diesel. He was booted out of the House of Truth. He ended up laying out J. Diesel with his move, Feast Your Eyes, which is basically the Lex Luger torture rack into a GTS. Very cool. Crowd chanted Dijak's name as Prince Nana showed up. He was applauding all of this. Dijak is a pretty impressive guy. He's a big guy, like 6'6", 6'7". He pulled off this wild, like he propelled himself onto the top rope during the match and did this weird spinning dive from the top rope out to the floor, wiped everybody out. You know, he's able to do stuff that you wouldn't expect out of a guy that big. So he's pretty impressive. And Dalton Castle, who is now back with his boys in his corner, he won a four corners match over Moose, Matt Sydal, and Jay Briscoe when he pinned Sydal. Interesting mix of guys here. This was fun. Dalton Castle was beloved by this crowd. And so main event next week is going to be a lot of fun. Again, three-way Philly street fight, Red Dragon, the Kingdom, and the Young Bucks. Let's get to the mailbag and your questions. You could always email them to me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from. when you write in. Michael tweeted me, a bunch of people did actually, asking me to talk about the Chuck Austin stuff that I tweeted about yesterday. So if you didn't see it, somebody in our Facebook group posted a link to a television news segment from like 25 years ago that I had never seen before. And the reason is because the video was only posted on YouTube this weekend. It hasn't been like on YouTube for years and years. Somebody posted it this weekend. And it was a segment on Charles Austin. Charles Austin is the name of a prelim guy. He was an enhancement guy that WWF brought in 1990 to work a match against the Rockers. And he took the Rocker Dropper wrong from Marty Jannetty, and he was paralyzed. Now, he regained some movement where he's able to kind of move around, but he's still pretty fucked up, or at least, you know, as of all these years ago in this segment, which was not long after it happened, yeah, he was still pretty messed up, and he didn't have a lot of grip strength in one of his arms, and he was moving around with crutches on each arm. His, you know, young son had to help him around, so he was pretty messed up. And he filed suit against WWF, claiming, I don't know, whatever he was claiming, unsafe working conditions or negligence or whatever. And he won a judgment against them. And not only did he win a judgment, but they gave him even more money, I think, than he was asking for. And they gave him like a $27 million judgment or something like that. And at the time, WWF, they said in the report, was appealing, and he still, you know, he and his family had not seen one red cent of that judgment, and it was all up in the air. And there was no update as far as what happened. And I don't remember. I knew about the Chuck Austin incident. I had never seen it before. This is the first time I've seen video. They actually have the video of what happened. And he explains, he goes, you know, he only had about 6 months experience training to be a pro wrestler. And he came to one of the television tapings they used to have back in the day for like Challenge and Superstars. He got in the back door, him and somebody else. And, you know, they didn't ask him many questions. They didn't ask him, hey, what experience do you have or anything like that. They just put him out there. And his job was to go out there and just do the job for the Rockers. And they show what happened. And Jannetty, you know, had his move, the Rocker Dropper, where he would place his leg over, you know, on top of the back of your head. And he would drive you down face first into the mat. Now, it's obvious from watching the video that somebody fucked up. And I don't think it was Jannetty, because Jannetty was a pro. He's done the move a million times before. What happened is this guy, and they show it in slow-mo, and it's pretty brutal. So Jannetty's got his leg draped over the guy's head. The guy's bent over. So Jannetty goes to, you know, drive him down into the mat. And Austin, what he did is what you're not supposed to do, clearly. He kind of jumped up. Instead of just falling down, you could tell he almost like jumped up a little bit and then was driven down. He landed right on top of his head. He got spiked right into the mat. His body went limp. Jannetty tried to roll him over. The guy is, you know, telling him, listen, I broke my neck. I'm paralyzed. Jannetty rolls him over anyway, which is not what you're supposed to do. He tags in Shawn Michaels. Shawn Michaels comes off the top rope with an elbow. This fucking guy's laying on the mat paralyzed, and Shawn's coming off the top rope on him. And it's just a really shitty situation. So the question is, who's at fault? Was it Austin's fault for not knowing what he was doing and taking the move wrong? Was it WWF's fault? Was it Jannetty's fault? I watched this video, and I don't come away from it thinking that there's any one person at fault. I think everybody is at fault. I think Austin is at fault because he took the move the wrong way. I think Jannetty was at fault because he's got no business, especially if the guy is telling you, hey, I think my neck is broken. Okay, if he's telling the truth that he was communicating this to Jannetty, and Jannetty, you could see, kind of leans in like they're talking. Jannetty had no business rolling the guy over. Shawn Michaels had no business then coming off the top rope on this fucking guy. WWF had no business putting him in the ring if he had no experience. So I think everybody bears some responsibility here. And, you know, he is now, you know, paralyzed, and he's severely injured, and he has medical bills and expenses. And so I think it's, I think... You know, WWF was going to be responsible and should be responsible. Now, is it $10 million, $20 million, $30 million? I mean, you could argue what the number should be. I didn't know what the update was. I couldn't find any information anywhere. So I actually sent a tweet over to Dave Meltzer, because I know Meltzer, you know, knows the whole story about what happened there. And I said, you know, hey, Dave, you know, do you know what the outcome of this was? You know, of the appeal? Did WWF win? Did this guy ever get the money? And so he tweeted back to me, and he said that Austin collected, I think, $10 million, or or that 27 million figure was reduced to 10 million, and I assume at that point he got paid. So that's what happened. And you know, when you're hurt and you're paralyzed and you're going to need medical care for the rest of your life and you don't know how much longer you're going to live, you could live for 10 years, you could live for another 40 years, that adds up. So $10 million sounds like a lot of money, but it really isn't. You know, and I don't know what his situation is now, if he's run out of the money or what, but somebody sent me a follow-up report that was done a year ago. So this was only in 2015. There was a news report that was about a broader story. Some doctors are not filling prescriptions for patients who need pain medication. I don't know if it's because they're worried that they're going to abuse the pain medication and then they're going to be liable for it or what, but there's increasingly a number of doctors out there who are just saying, no, we're not going to fill that. And Austin was featured in the report. He's now confined to a wheelchair. He's in a bad way. And he says, you know, he needs to be on this pain medication. I think it might be like, I don't know if it's OxyContin or whatever. It's said in the news story. Even being on the pain medication every day, you know, he's still in bed 80% of the day. He's like, if I'm not on pain medication, you know, I'm going to be confined to my bed 100% of the time. You know, he's got tears in his eyes. He's always in pain. I mean, you really feel bad for the guy. And so he's not doing very well, it seems, these days at all. And the question is, again, who do you think is at fault here? My opinion is that everybody is at fault. It's not just Austin. It's not just WWF. I think everybody is guilty here on some level. If you've never seen the segments, if you want to see the injury, it's pretty brutal stuff. If you want to see the follow-up report, I link to both of them on my Twitter page on Saturday night. So if you want to go on Twitter, at Solomonster, scroll back. You can watch the videos yourself. And let me know what you think. You know, who do you think is at fault here? Do you think it's Austin? Do you think it's Jannetty? Is it, you know, is it Vince and WWF? You know, should the guy have gotten money? Should he not have? Let me know what you think, because there's a lot of varying opinions about what happened here. But the idea that this guy could just walk in, literally through the back door, and with 6 months' experience can just be put on television like that and have to take a move, a pretty dangerous move. You know, he says he talked to Jannetty, he had reservations about it before the match, and Jannetty said, don't worry, I'm a professional, I've done this a gazillion times. You know, this is what Austin says in the news piece. But the idea that he could just walk in the back door without being vetted and just be put in that situation is kind of crazy. But, you know, that was commonplace back then. You wouldn't see that now, but it's kind of crazy to think about. Luis from Windsor, Ontario, Canada. On the Jim Ross Report podcast, Steve Austin said he'll likely be at WrestleMania, and it got me thinking of what Austin might do on the show. My guess is he'll either be the host or a special guest referee, with Rock confirming his appearance as well. It got me thinking if this match could be a possibility. If Rock and Austin are not going to wrestle, why not put them in the main event between Roman Reigns and Triple H, with Rock being in Roman's corner and Austin being the guest referee? It's not bad. It's not bad at all. I think that could work. I still like my idea better, though. You know, you have Roman win the Rumble. He wrestles Triple H at Fastlane. Rock gets involved. We get Rock against Triple H at Mania. And this is assuming if Rock wrestles. Very possible Rock will not wrestle, but he keeps building this whole thing up. Like, ooh, I got something big planned for WrestleMania. I feel like if he doesn't wrestle, if he just is there to talk or something, or even if he was a referee, is that really that big of a deal? I almost feel like maybe he's overplaying it if he's not going to be wrestling. But if he is, we get Rock against Triple H and Mania, and in that match, you have Steve Austin as the guest referee. And we get Reigns Lesnar 2 as the other main event for the championship. Now you have a double main event instead of just throwing everybody into one match. I don't know why you would want to do that. You know, you got to fill that card up. You got a lot of guys out hurt. If you have all these drawing cards, Austin, Rock, why are you going to put them all in the same match? And I really don't care to see Triple H wrestling for the championship at WrestleMania. Because it's also predictable. I mean, you talk about predictable. I don't want to see him wrestling for the title at all. But if he is, whether he's defending it or challenging for it, he's not winning, right? So to me, the outcome, it's not even in dispute. With Reigns and Lesnar, I think Lesnar this time takes the loss and Reigns goes over. But who the hell knows? Maybe not. There's at least a little more of an unpredictable element to it, I think, if you do that match. Anything with Triple H, it's pretty obvious. If it's him against Reigns, who's their new boy, they're not going to have Triple H beat the guy at WrestleMania. So I don't have any interest in seeing that match. To me, It's been there, done that, with Triple H wrestling for the championship. It's like Cena wrestling for the title or defending the title. It is beyond overdone. John from Los Angeles, I wanted to get your take on last year's Royal Rumble winner, Roman Reigns. Many people were displeased that he won instead of Daniel Bryan. But seeing as Bryan was injured again in 2015, around the same time as his previous injury from 2014, I believe that Reigns was the best choice to win last year's Rumble match long term. WWE's lack of credible contenders was evident, and there were only two logical options to win that year's Rumble match, which were Reigns and Bryan. The victory for Bryan would have made more sense storyline-wise, but his victory would have eventually put the title in limbo again. And while Reigns' win did receive a negative reaction, it still led to the classic WrestleMania main event with Brock Lesnar. Overall, 2015 ended for WWE with so many injuries. I think Roman Reigns was the best choice to win the Rumble. What do you think? I agree. And I never said Daniel Bryan had to win last year's Rumble match. I said he absolutely should have won it in 2014. He wasn't even in the damn thing. But last year I said you had two legitimate choices to win that Rumble match. For the first time in years, we could have had a genuinely exciting, unpredictable finish for the Royal Rumble. And instead, they eliminated Bryan early in the match. No drama the way it happened. No nothing. No setup for an angle that was going to lead to a match for him at WrestleMania. It was Bray Wyatt knocking him off the apron, and that was it. And then at that point, it became patently obvious who was winning, especially when it came down to fucking Kane and Big Show with Roman Reigns. You have it come down to Reigns and Bryan with Reigns winning, and then after the match, Bryan shakes his hand, he endorses him. You know, maybe the crowd boos Bryan the way they booed Rock when Rock raised Roman's arm, but I don't think so. I don't think the backlash would have been as strong. That was the ending to go with. That's the only thing I really had a problem with last year's Royal Rumble. And what they did fucked the entire matchup. It just screwed everything up. And also, you know, the idea that, well, Bryan was going to get hurt anyway. We don't know that. How can you be sure? We don't know. He suffered a concussion in a match with Sheamus. If Bryan does win the Rumble, if he wins the title again at WrestleMania, right? Or better yet, we get Bryan against Brock, but they still do the Rollins Money in the Bank cash-in. Bryan doesn't even have to win the championship. Who's to say that he ends up wrestling Sheamus in April and gets concussed? Maybe the match never happens and he never gets hurt. We don't know. So I think it's impossible to say. Latago from London. I know the 1992 Royal Rumble is your all-time favorite, but do you have another four or five, Rumble matches that you have liked over the years? I don't know if I can name four or five. I'll try. I mean, 92 is my favorite. I think 2001 was a pretty good one. 2005. You know, if I had to rank them, I might actually put 2005 at number two, believe it or not. I really liked that Rumble match for whatever reason in 2005. 2002 was a long one. I think 2002 may have been legitimately the longest Rumble match they've ever done. That was the one Triple H won. Mr. Perfect came back in that one. It was long, but I remember that one also being pretty good, especially the spot with Undertaker and Maven. It was one of those genuinely shocking moments, and it got a big reaction, and then, of course, Undertaker killed him. I wish we would have more moments like that in the Rumble. So I think those are the ones. If anybody out there is looking to, you know, binge watch a bunch of Royal Rumble matches between now and next weekend and you don't know what to watch other than 1992, and if you haven't watched that one, shame on you. You can watch like 93 and some of the early, even 1990. Like if you like that period in WWF, then you can watch those matches. But I think 2001, 2002, 2005, those are three that stand out to me. 2007 was the one that came down to Shawn and The Undertaker. I think that was also pretty good. I mean, there's really no other ones like recently that stand out to me that much. So I would say check those out. I think you'll enjoy them. They're pretty good. But I can't really say that there's another one that stands out. It's like a must-watch Royal Rumble match. John from Chicago. What would you think of an Alberto Del Rio versus Kurt Angle match at WrestleMania for the U.S. title? I think the match could be a show stealer. I know it's unlikely Angle comes back to WWE anytime soon, but I predict he will be one of the surprise entrants this year's Royal Rumble. If he comes back, he can have feuds with guys like Owens, Ambrose, and Daniel Bryan. It's a must-win, or a win-win, I should say, for everybody. Your thoughts? Angle is still under contract at TNA until the end of the month, so he's not going to be in the Royal Rumble. I hate to burst your bubble, but that's not happening. But I do like the idea of Angle against Del Rio and the idea that it's for the U.S. title. Here's the Olympic hero wrestling for the United States Championship. I could see that. I think those two would have a great match. I think they'd beat the hell out of each other. They're both submission guys. It could be the battle of the armbar against the ankle lock, so I like that. I like that dynamic. Spencer from Keswick, Ontario, who had more promise to be a top talent, Matt Hardy or Christian? That's a good one. I probably was more of a fan of Christian than I was Matt Hardy, but I got to give Matt Hardy his due. Matt Hardy is a very smart guy. I've always heard that from people that do interviews, and they know the Hardy boys. Not that Jeff is like a dummy or anything, but they said Matt, even back in like the Omega days and stuff, he was very, very smart about the wrestling business. And so between that and the fact that, you know, he and Jeff were always, yeah, they were very good. They had those classic tag team matches together. And then when Matt got his first real singles push with the whole Matt Hardy V1, and remember the Matt facts they put on TV, he had a good thing going there for a while. I mean, he was only wrestling for like the cruiserweight title. I think he could have gone even higher than that. But he had a good thing going. He was a good heel, and he was very popular. People seemed to be into him. But the company just never got behind him the way they did Jeff. And then, of course, Matt had his issues, the whole situation with Lita and Edge, and then he got hurt, and then he came back, and they never really got behind him at that point. So who's to say how far he could have gone? Do I look at Matt Hardy and say, you know, I see him as a world champion? I never really did, but Christian, you know what? You can say the same thing about Christian. You can say the same thing about Christian. Christian was very talented. No one's doubting, you know, the guy's ability. He was very talented. When he got the chance to really branch out on his own as a heel, he had Tomko as his bodyguard. I would almost equate that to the period that Matt went through when he had the Matt Facts and Shannon Moore was kind of his lackey. They're very similar in that way. Although I think Christian was in a position where he could have feuded with John Cena for that WWE Championship, and they never pulled the trigger on that. It looked like that was the direction they were going in. They never did it. I think for Christian, that was the straw that broke the camel's back when they kind of yanked that away from him and he was gone. I think later that year he left and went to TNA because he could see the writing on the wall. And then there's the great story of Vince outright telling him that I don't see you as being a top guy. And Vince didn't like Christian and the whole blue dot story. I've talked about that before. So I think they're very similar in that way. They were part of a tag team where Jeff just caught fire, and everyone said, oh, Jeff Hardy's going to be the champion, and he became the champion. And Edge, I think people said the same thing about Edge. I mean, I don't want to sit here and say that, you know, Matt Hardy was the Jannetty of the team and Christian was the Jannetty of his team. You know, poor Marty Jannetty. I mean, people have been using that analogy for so many years. I wouldn't go that far, because I think the both of them, they could have been capable world champions. I just, with Matt, it never got to that point where I saw him at that level. I know he won the ECW title, but, you know, who cares? Christian, I think they had a real shot with him, and they squandered it. But I'm going to say, yeah, I can't choose. Honestly, I see them very, very similar on the same level. I can't sit here and tell you that I think Christian could have been a top guy, but not Matt Hardy. Or Matt Hardy could have been a world champion, but not Christian. Whether you believe they could or couldn't have, to me, they're kind of one and the same in a lot of ways. I mean, if you force me to make a choice here, I guess just based on what I just said to you, Christian was in a position to feud with Cena for the championship, then I'll go with Christian. But I don't see either guy being the person with the belt who carries the company as the top heel or the top babyface or the face of the brand. I don't see either one of them as being that person. Christian really did get fucked over, but I don't see him really ever being in that position, and I never saw Matt Hardy being in that position, but they're super talented. So it's hard for me to choose one over the other. If I had to, I'll go with Christian, but, you know, it's tough. Josh from Southern Maryland, what are your thoughts on the Cyber Sunday Taboo Tuesday pay-per-view model, and do you think that model would work well in our highly intuitive online lifestyle? Wow, that's a fancy way of saying, you know, smartphones and shit. That's how I would describe it. In a world of smartphones and shit, would the pay-per-view model work today? And if so, would you like to see this model return, and how do you think it should be handled? I said many years ago, I thought that was something that would really work more on a Raw show. No one's going to pay for a pay-per-view where they don't know the matches ahead of time. And that's why the pay-per-view didn't last very long. They did it for a few years. If it was so successful, they'd still be doing it. But, you know, it's like, oh, well, you know, that night you'll be able to vote. And then there's the question, maybe some people doubted the authenticity of the vote, and so why pay for a pay-per-view where the fix is already in? I mean, everybody had their own opinions on the concept. I never liked it, really, as a pay-per-view concept. I would have been totally fine with them doing it on Raw, and they have. You know, every time they have an app vote, usually it's only like one match at a time, and they don't do it every week. But when they say, go to the app and vote on who you want, you know, to wrestle Randy Orton, or what you want the stipulation to be. You know, like when they do you want to see a no-holds-barred match, a no-DQ match? And, you know, they have stupid votes like that. But if they wanted to do it, you know, free television. They have 3 hours of Raw. You could turn an episode of Raw into Cyber Sunday. Well, I guess Cyber Monday it would be. But that's the place to do it. I never liked it as a pay-per-view concept. The fans never liked it as a pay-per-view concept, because if they did, they'd still be doing it. That's it. End of story. Ryan from Baltimore, can you please tell the story about Hardbody Harrison? Well, I mean, there isn't much to tell. He was a job guy in WCW. He got arrested many years later for sex trafficking. He claimed that I think in the story at the time, his argument was these women, these persecuted women, like, he was just training them to be pro wrestlers, but really he was pimping them out. I remember this because I think he was sentenced around the exact same time I started doing this podcast. That's how many years ago it was. And I think he got a life sentence, so I assume he's still locked up serving time. J.R. Sanders, straight out of Compton, California. My question is in regard to the Stone Cold Stunner. Who do you feel sold the Stunner the best, and who do you feel sold it the worst? Scott Hall probably sold it the best. He would do this motion where as soon as Austin would sit down and nail the move, he would pop up into the air and then fall flat on his back. The Rock, I mean, The Rock sold, I mean, come on, classic, you know. The Rock sold it great, but he completely oversold, even more than Scott Hall did. The Rock would always comically oversell the Stunner. I mean, I enjoyed it, but sometimes even I would be like, really, dude? Like, come on. And you know who else sold it great? I'll throw one more name on that list. Shane McMahon. Shane McMahon. He must have been adopted, because every other member of that family couldn't sell that Stunner for shit. Vince and Linda were the just absolute dirt worst at selling that move. Vince flopped around like a fish on his very first one that he ever took, and then there was that one on Raw. I think it was during the Invasion. It was Vince versus Shane, and Austin got involved, and he went to give Vince a Stunner, but Vince fell before Austin did. It was just a disaster. And Linda, that one time she took a Stunner, she hit the mat, I think, before Austin's ass did. And you know what? I'll put one more name on that list. You know who may have been worse than Vince or Linda McMahon at taking the Stunner? Possibly, as crazy as this sounds, our next president of the United States, Donald Trump. I give him a lot of credit for even agreeing to take the move in the first place, but my God, what a horrible Stunner that was at WrestleMania. His body went one way, and his hair went the other way. So I would put Trump on top, and then Vince and Linda probably are tied for second worst. But I'd say Scott Hall was the best. Boris from Bulgaria. Do you think with all the buzz going on with the New Japan raid and all, that it is possible for WWE to consider, or should they consider, doing the Wyatt family versus the Balor Club at WrestleMania 32? Can this also be considered a dream match? Should also the Wyatts finally win a match at WrestleMania? I think at some point down the road, if they do this Balor Club thing, who knows, maybe 6 months or a year from now, you can do the Wyatts against the Balor Club, but I think that's a terrible idea. First of all, this whole Balor Club thing may not even happen. Even if it does, you know, like Gallows and Anderson, who would be two of the big members of the group, maybe the only two members of the group, they're not even coming in until March, and it sounds like they're probably going to go straight to NXT. So the idea that these guys would come in, and then within a month, you would promote them to the main roster and put them against the Wyatt family, and because the Wyatts have been so abused over the last year by their booking that they would beat the Balor Club. So you're going to bring these guys in and beat them right away in their first match? I think that is a terrible idea. I mean, I'm not saying that you're wanting to see them against each other is bad. I just think the timing is horrendous. And would I consider it a dream match? No. I don't see that as being a dream match. There's very few matches, if any, that I could think. Actually, I could think of a few. But there's very few dream matches left, I think, in WWE that you could do. You know, like for me, the idea of seeing Bryan and Brock, I know it's, I'm still holding out hope, and I shouldn't because it's not going to happen. I would consider that in some ways to be a dream match, just because I think those two could go out there and have a kick-ass match. In terms of like dream matches bringing in a big name or something, I guess we'll see. If AJ Styles comes in, the idea of Styles against Balor or Styles against Bryan if he ever heals up, Styles against Rollins, those would be some pretty fucking badass matches. But there really aren't that many dream matches left. You know, some people would say Undertaker and Sting, it's the last real dream match. Well, that ain't going to happen either, it looks like. So how many dream matches are there left? Not many. And this certainly would not be one of them. But I just think to rush it for WrestleMania and have the Balor Club lose, it sounds like something WWE would probably do, but I think that would be a terrible idea. Will from Dublin, after hearing you talk about how much you dislike hearing Michael Cole say, "Oh my," all the time, it got me thinking, buy or sell, on which is worse, "Oh my," or "It is thunderous in blank," whatever arena. I'm guessing you'll stick with your gut, but he uses the "it's thunderous" line every time a decent pop happens. It's like a reflex. Well, you know, he doesn't use it as much lately, because when was the last time they had any kind of thunderous reaction from any crowd at any of their shows? I mean, let's be honest here. Have you seen these crowds lately? And it's not even their fault. I just talked about this before. I don't blame the fans. It's not their fault they're sitting on their hands. But I, you know, I'm sticking with the "oh my" stuff. The "it is thunderous" isn't so bad when there's actually a time to use it. The "oh my" thing just gets on my nerves far more. So I think actually his buy or sell question was, which one would you buy so that you can then get rid of it or bury it or destroy it? I'm buying the "oh my" so I can bury it 6 feet under and never have to hear it again. Daryl from Hartford, buy or sell WrestleMania 17 or WrestleMania 30? Which, in your opinion, had the better hype, the better card, great main event, and ending? Which did you walk away from and say that was the best that WWE had to offer? I'm a big fan of WrestleMania 30, not just because I'm a Daniel Bryan fan, but I thought overall it was the best WrestleMania they had done in years and years. I thought the opening segment with Austin and Rock and Hogan was awesome. The first match, Triple H and Bryan, that was a great opening match. Not the best they've ever done. I mean, Bret Owen would still be at the top of the list for me, but that's a hell of an opening match. You put Triple H out there with Daniel Bryan for 25 minutes, you know, and Bryan gets the big win, place goes nuts. That was pretty cool. And I think right after that was the Battle Royal, and that was when Cesaro body slammed Big Show out of the ring. The place exploded. I mean, little did we know they would end up doing nothing with Cesaro, but at that time it seemed like this is like a turning point for this guy. And just the visual of him slamming, you know, Big Show out of the ring, I'm like, holy shit, this is the greatest WrestleMania of all time. We had the opening segment, Triple H and Bryan, now this. It's like, we're on a roll here, first three segments. And then it kind of died down, right? It cooled down a little bit. You had Brock and Undertaker, which was a terrible match, but the finish, I mean, my God, probably, it's got to be the second most shocking or second most controversial finish that they've ever done behind Montreal. In that company, it was a genuinely stunning moment. You will never have another WrestleMania moment like that ever again, where the outcome of a match, which seems to matter less and less these days, the idea of who wins and who loses, the idea that the ref counts three, this guy wins, this guy loses, and they pan to the crowd, and everybody is just in stunned disbelief, eyes wide, mouth gaping open. You're never going to have another match like that ever again. Unless two guys kill each other in the ring, you're never going to see that again. So that was a memorable moment. And then the main event, I thought, was awesome. I thought they, you know, and I'm not even a fan of triple threat matches in the main event of WrestleMania. I hate them. I hate the idea of doing them. I'd much prefer one-on-one. But they did the three-way with Bryan and Orton and Batista. It was a little slow to start, but it built up, and those three had an awesome match. And then the visual of Bryan making Batista tap out and winning the championship and the big celebration, the big payoff after all the months of being abused by the authority, and the confetti is falling, you know, and at a time when very few people ever get one over on the authority, I thought top to bottom that WrestleMania that year was one of the best in many, many, many years. That being said, after saying all of that, I can't put that ahead of WrestleMania 17. I can't tell you that WrestleMania 30 was more epic than WrestleMania 17. I can't tell you that it even had the better main event. As a match, you could argue that maybe WrestleMania 30 was better. Because I don't think the WrestleMania 17 match with Austin and Rock was even their best match. It was pretty good. Maybe even great. But not my favorite of their matches. And the turn at the end was dumb. Of course, you could look back on it now and say that, but it was fucking stupid. So yeah, WrestleMania 30 had the much better ending. But in terms of top to bottom, I mean, look at that WrestleMania 17 card. You had Austin and Rock, the two big stars of their generation, two of the biggest stars ever, in the main event for the championship. Big sold-out dome in Texas. Austin gets the hero's welcome. Underneath, you had Undertaker and Triple H, who had a hell of a match. No titles on the line or anything, just straight up one-on-one. You had Vince and Shane, who had a great street fight. And you want to hear a crowd reaction. You go back and watch that match. Of all the people in WWE history to get the biggest reaction, I never thought it would be Linda McMahon. But when Linda McMahon, who was doing the whole comatose deal at the time, and Vince put her in the ring and sat her in the corner on a chair and said, "Watch this," and he went to go beat up his son, and he turns around and Linda rises from her chair, I challenge you to go back and watch that and tell me that you can find, you know, three bigger reactions like that in WWE history. Now, it's a little unfair because you had 70,000 people there. It's fucking unbelievable. People went nuts. And then she gave him the low blow, kicked him in the nuts. People lost their shit. Linda McMahon. Okay? That's how popular, that's how hot wrestling was at that time. And this was like the very end of the Attitude Era. This wasn't even like the prime, like right in the middle of the Monday Night War and everything. The war was over. The war ended that month, or the month before. And Linda McMahon got that kind of reaction. And this was all on the undercard. And you had TLC 2, my favorite of all the TLC matches. You had Kurt Angle and Chris Benoit in their first match. Not their best, but still, it's Angle and Benoit. You had the gimmick Battle Royal, which was fun. It was not a good match, but it was fun. That's all it was intended to be. And also, it got us Bobby Heenan back on commentary one last time. It's such a shame what happened to that guy. It depresses the hell out of me. And I wish he was a bigger part of WWE now and in the last several years. And it's a crime what's happened to him. And in a way, it's a crime that WWE doesn't acknowledge him more than they do. I don't think that's right. But we got Bobby Heenan back on commentary. And that alone, to me, makes that just, you know, the fucking greatest thing in the world. And then there were some other good matches, too. There was like a fun, hardcore three-way with Kane and Raven and Big Show that I remember being fun. You're not going to find a WrestleMania card top to bottom that's more epic, I think, than WrestleMania 17. So I know I just gave a long-winded answer, but I wanted to just explain why I can't put WrestleMania 30 over 17, even though I thought 30 was a great show. I think those are two of the best WrestleManias they've ever done, to be honest with you. And in this case, I got to buy on WrestleMania 17 and sell on 30. But, if, you know, go back and watch both of them and you'll see two of the better WrestleMania cards they've ever done. And finally, here's Silvino from Las Vegas. On Sound Off Prediction Show for 2016, you predicted that Jeff Hardy would return to WWE at the end of the year. With that said, buy or sell on whether you see WWE only having the Hardys as part of the tag team division, or if you would want them to just be part of the tag team division and work with the Usos and the Wyatts and the Dudleys, or if you would have Matt Hardy get a run with the U.S. or Intercontinental title while Jeff Hardy challenges for the WWE Championship. I'm gonna buy on Jeff wrestling for the WWE title, and if Matt came with him, you know, they could put Matt in there wrestling for the IC or the US. Because I think Jeff, there's still money to be made. There's still a lot of, like, gas left in the tank as far as Jeff Hardy. I sound like Mark Henry now. As far as Jeff Hardy wrestling for the championship. I know it's been a long time and he's older and he's got the bad injury now. But if he can come back from that And I don't have any doubt that when he recovers, he's coming back. He's coming back to WWE, maybe not even with Matt. But for sure, Jeff is coming back. And, you know, the way I would do it, right, if I were in charge and I said, wow, we can get the Hardy Boys back, what do we want to do here? Here's how I see it going down. Matt and Jeff both are probably going to go back. Jeff for sure, but okay, let's say both of them come back. I see this as being a Dudley Boys type of situation. That's how I see this. And you're already seeing talk. Already there's talk. There's rumors of maybe having Bubba break away and reprise his Bully Ray persona from TNA. I mean, not with that name necessarily, but just branching off as a singles heel. I think there's a lot of untapped potential there for Bully Ray, and I hope they do that. The Dudley Boys came back. There was some fanfare the first couple of weeks. And now the Dudley Boys come out, and it's like nobody gives a shit. The bloom is off the rose. Nostalgia only works for so long. That's why Hogan would come and go and come and go, because he was smart enough to know that if he sticks around for too long or if he's on TV every week, nobody's going to give a fuck about him. And we're kind of seeing that with the Dudley Boys. So with the Hardys, I think it's going to be the exact same thing. If they come back, people are going to go nuts. Hey, the Hardy Boys are back. And you can get some great matches with the Hardys and the Dudleys, the Hardys and New Day, the Hardys and the Usos. But you give it a few months, and they're just going to be another team on the roster. And now you've squandered, potentially, whatever drawing power Jeff may have on his own as a singles guy. I mean, Matt, to me, I don't know that Matt, it's going to be that big of a deal. I think it'll be a much bigger deal to have Jeff back, because Jeff was an established guy. At one point in 2008, he was the hottest pro wrestler in the world. I mean, certainly in this country, maybe even in the world. I mean, that's how popular he had gotten. And he's got a lot of fans, I think, that are still watching WWE who would love to have him back. So I see the Hardys come back, they do the tag team thing for a while, and before it gets too stale, you don't turn them on each other, but they kind of start to go their separate ways and get back in the singles ranks, and that's when Jeff can compete for the championship. And I know he said he's got on his bucket list of things to do. He wants to be in one Hell in a Cell match before he retires, so he can do all that stuff. But I see it going down that way. We're already seeing it with the Dudleys. I think Bubba is going to end up going out on his own as a heel, and I think he should. But I think it's going to be the same formula with the Hardys. They'll come in, do the tag thing, go out on their own, and Jeff can wrestle in some main events again. That's what I would buy on if I was, you know, handling this and I could bring the Hardys in and make a decision on what to do with them. That's what I would do. Time for our WCW countdown. We're doing one match per week for 15 straight weeks, the greatest matches in WCW history. This, of course, leads into the 15-year anniversary of the final Nitro, which is coming up at the end of March. This week is match number 5 of 15 from WCW Monday Nitro, October 4th, 1999, from Kemper Arena in Kansas City, Missouri. Bret the Hitman Hart against the Crippler Chris Benoit, in a tribute match to the late Owen Hart, who fell to his death only 5 months earlier in that very same building doing the whole Blue Blazer entrance. And Bret, you know, in his book, which I finally was breaking into, and I'm kind of going back and forth, I'm not done with it, but in his book, he says it was Vince Russo's idea, and that Owen was supposed to trip and fall when he landed, and everybody was going to have a good laugh about it. But because the idea was that he would trip and fall once he landed in the ring, that's why there was no safety line. This is what Bret says in his book. And he had a pretty stiff line in there about how, you know, he's not assigning blame to anybody, but Vince Russo has to live with that for the rest of his life. And here in the WCW timeline of things, just to give a sense of what was going on at the time, Eric Bischoff had just been let go, and they hired Russo away from WWF. And Russo, I don't think Russo had started yet. This was literally like right when he would have jumped over, and he didn't jump into things immediately. But, you know, here's the guy who played a role in the whole Blue Blazer deal with Owen, now coming over to WCW at a time when Bret was wrestling a match in honor of Owen. So that's a little awkward. So Bret and Benoit both had to talk WCW into letting them do this match. Of course, you know, leave it to the performers to have to convince WCW to do something really cool. They have to actually convince them to do something that makes sense. Harley Race handled the ring announcing duties. He drove 3 hours with a bad back to be there. He is like a god in Kansas City. Tony Schiavone, Bobby Heenan, and Mike Tenay handled the announcing for the match. I thought Tony Schiavone was on his A game here. This is one of the better performances I've heard from Tony Schiavone on a WCW show. Tenay was also good, as usual here. I always thought Tenay was better in the supporting role than he was as the lead play-by-play guy in TNA. But I have to say, you know, Heenan, and I love Bobby Heenan to death, it felt out of place for him to be making wisecracks at different points in the match. Like, he could be serious for a little bit, but then he'd make a joke. And it just, you know, this is a tribute match to a guy that died. It's a serious wrestling match. I didn't think it was the place for him to be making wisecracks. I know that's always been his shtick, but again, Bobby Heenan could be serious when he had to be. God knows he was serious so many times when the NWO was running around and causing chaos. There's a time to play it straight and be serious and not cracking jokes. I thought this was the time, so I just didn't really care for his performance here. And that's painful for me to say. And it wasn't even just the joking stuff. He just didn't seem to know what he was talking about. At one point, he made a comment about he wasn't sure, or he said that this could be the first time these two have seen each other. But then Tenay, Mike Tenay, had to jump in and be like, "Well, we saw these guys wrestle like a few months ago, or sometime recently they had a match," and it was like, "Ouch!" It was pretty embarrassing. This was not Bobby Heenan's best performance. It was babyface against babyface. Slow start to the match. Really an old-school pro wrestling match where the guys knew they had a lot of time. They took it. They took their time to build this thing up. I mean, they gave these two almost 30 minutes. That was practically unheard of during that period. You had both companies in a war with each other. The last thing you want to do is send a match out there for 30 minutes. I mean, that just didn't happen. I mean, the war was pretty much over by that point, but still. That's a long time, and it's hard to retain an audience when you have a match that long. And so because of that, it took a while for the crowd to really get into it. They weren't disrespectful at all. They were respectful. You know, there were no catcalls or boring chants like you might get today or anything like that. But they were not really overly into the match at the beginning. It was very quiet. And then it built, and it built, and it built. And finally, by the end, they were really into it. The finish was Benoit going for the Crippler Crossface. Brett is fighting to stay out of the hold. Somehow, he's laying on top of Benoit. He manages to turn that into a sharpshooter. And that's the crowd finally came alive, and Benoit had no choice but to tap out, trapped in the middle of the ring. The two men embrace after the match. Benoit is in tears, and Brett... Well, what I meant to write down here in this bullet was Brett salutes Owen. Three simple words. And Microsoft Word apparently changed it because this says Brett sauteed Owen, which would give this whole thing an entirely different meaning if that were the case. Brett did not saute his little brother. He saluted him, I promise you. And he and Benoit left together. That's a new one. I haven't heard that one before. Anyway, WCW, the title got held up in a tournament after this that Brett won. It was the month after, actually. Ironically, it was Benoit and Brett in the finals, and Brett won the championship. He then wrestled Goldberg. He got mule kicked in the head, concussed. He was forced to retire the following year. Benoit also wrestled his last WCW match like Brett in January. He beat Sid for the world title in a last-ditch attempt by Kevin Sullivan to keep him from jumping ship, but didn't work, and Benoit gave up the title the very next night. He went to WWE. I look at this match, and it's one of the few times that Brett was allowed to go out there and do what he did best, which is wrestle and tell a story in the ring. That's what he did best. Brett was never the flashiest guy, but you give him 15, 20, 30 minutes, whatever it is, with the right person, there is nobody that could touch him as far as his work. His selling. Nobody sold a beating more realistically than Bret Hart did. And Benoit was the perfect opponent for him, and it's a real shame that WCW had their head shoved so far up their ass with this guy. You know, they only paid him, what, $9 gazillion? You would think that he'd be one of the few guys that they wouldn't want to fuck up and actually would want to get the most out of, but I guess not. I can't imagine why a company like that went out of business. Follow me on Twitter. Actually, before we get to that, one last thing. I wanted to mention this. if you remember the last classic Sound Off episode, like the old ones that can't be found anywhere else anymore except when I put them on YouTube, the last one I put on our YouTube channel was episode 10 of the show from January of 2008. You can go up there, and one of the things I talked about and I was going nuts about in that episode was the movie Cloverfield. This was right before Cloverfield was coming out, I think, or was it after? No, I think this was right before. And I was so amped up and excited to go see this movie. I totally bought into the whole viral marketing campaign, which ended up a complete disappointment because it had nothing to do with anything in the movie. I was thinking, oh man, you know, what does this mean? And they put clues out about all these different things, and in the end, it didn't mean a goddamn thing. But the movie itself, I loved. And I see a lot of people, a lot of hate on Cloverfield. Oh, what a shitty film, and da-da-da-da-da. I loved it. I thought it was fucking great. I saw it three times in the movie theater with three different people. And then there was no talk about a sequel, really. I mean, there was murmurs about it, but it didn't go anywhere. This was 2008. So I get a tweet the other day from somebody who goes, oh, Cloverfield 2! I'm like, what? He goes, here, check it out. And it's a link to the trailer for this new movie, 10 Cloverfield Lane. I knew nothing about this. Apparently nobody knew anything about this. The production company, they had a movie on the docket many years ago. I think they had John Goodman and somebody else. They had signed up for this movie called Valencia. And then nothing was ever mentioned again about this movie Valencia. And then all of a sudden, we have this trailer, and John Goodman is in it, and this other woman who was supposed to be in the Valencia film. And it's like, ah, okay. So what happened was, that was never an actual movie. That was just a fake, phony title for what was the Cloverfield sequel. And I'm not even sure if this is really a sequel. I don't even know if that's the right word. J.J. Abrams came out and said that, yes, this movie is basically a blood relative of Cloverfield. That could mean anything. That could mean any number of things. That could mean it's in the same universe, but it has nothing to do at all with the Cloverfield monster. This could be before what happened in the last movie or after what happened in the last movie. You know, I watched the trailer. It's like a teaser trailer. They don't give anything away. Just like in the first Cloverfield movie, they gave very little away. They had that teaser trailer where the Statue of Liberty head gets thrown and lands in the street. They attached it to Transformers. And I just remember people weren't talking. I mean, they were talking about Transformers, but people were just like, whoa. Like, that trailer before the movie came out of nowhere. And when Transformers was over, they were still talking about, hey, you know, they didn't even have a name attached to the movie. It's just like coming 11808 or something. It was incredible the way they promoted that film. And they're kind of doing the same thing here. They filmed this movie in secret. Nobody knew about it. It's coming out in March. So it's not even a case we got to wait a year. This fucking thing is coming out in less than 2 months. And anything that has John Goodman in it is A-OK in my book. Now, this is not found footage. This is shot more like a normal movie. But they didn't give much away. It's just a family that's like locked up in like a basement or something. And the girl tries to get away and go to open the door, and they're telling her, don't open the door, and she sees something horrific outside. Anybody who saw the first Cloverfield movie, I'm not giving too much away here, but basically, there's a bomb that gets dropped, presumably, on the monster, and that's kind of, we don't know what happens at that point. You watch this trailer, and it almost makes it seem like this is after that happens, and maybe that's why they're kind of cooped up in this basement or wherever the hell they are. And maybe they're yelling at her, like, don't go outside, nuclear fallout. I don't fucking know. All I know is I'm amped as shit. I feel like it's 2008 all over again. I can't wait to see this movie. And so if you didn't see the trailer, it's all over YouTube now. I guess it was attached to of all things, I think it was attached to, like, the Benghazi movie that came out or something. And so anyway, I just wanted to mention that. Since I went crazy over Cloverfield all those years ago, and I know some people are going to hear that and be like, really? Salamaster, the movie was shit. Why are you going nuts for it? I liked it. I like monster movies like that. I'm not even that big on found footage stuff, but I just thought what they did there was great. And that movie came out at a time before all the found footage movies really just got out of control. Like, there may have been a few at that point. I don't remember when Blair Witch came out. But it was like after that, all of a sudden, all these found footage movies came out. So this was at the beginning of that whole trend. And maybe because I'm from New York and it was set in New York, I don't know what it was. But I loved it, and I'm looking forward to this movie. I can't wait. So I just wanted to get that off my chest. I feel better now. You can follow me on Twitter, at Salamonster. Don't forget to vote in our Raw poll. As soon as Raw goes off the air every Monday night, I throw a poll up there. Thumbs up, thumbs down. like when Triple H gave the thumbs up, thumbs down to Randy Orton in Evolution. So you can go on there and vote. Also, don't forget, vote for us once a day under Show of the Year in the Wrestling Radio Awards. Help us repeat 2 years in a row. Go to WrestlingRadioAwards.com for that. And if you missed it, check out my interview with WWE Hall of Famer Booker T on SoundUff 417. It's up on our YouTube channel as well as on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn and every other platform that this show is available on. And after you listen, drop Booker a tweet at BookerT5X and let him know that you heard him on the SoundUff and what you thought of the interview. So that's going to do it for this week, episode 419. Now, I have an announcement about next weekend. So next weekend, of course, is the Royal Rumble. We will be doing Royal Rumble predictions. I am going to be in Orlando. I'm flying down on Thursday. I'm not coming back until the following Tuesday. So I'm going to be in Orlando. We're going to be there with Noah and the crew. We're all going to be down there. And the plan as of right now is we're going to do a roundtable sound off next weekend. I don't know exactly what day. It's not going to drop on Sunday, most likely. It may drop on Saturday. We haven't quite worked out all the details yet. But it sounds like we're going to be able to get a studio. It's going to be great. We're going to do a show. And we might actually do a post show as well. Not Sunday night, but maybe that Monday. And that could be a fun show too, because we're talking about some fun things we may be able to do. I don't want to say more than that. So, you may get a double dose of the sound off next weekend. But I will be in Orlando. If you're going to the Royal Rumble, if you're going to be at the show, if you're going to be at the NXT tapings on Friday night, if you see me, say hello. I'm not going to be at Raw that Monday because who gives a shit? But I will be at NXT. I will be at the Rumble. I hope to see you there. Who knows? At the Rumble, you may even see me on TV. We'll see. I'll wave. I don't know where. I'm told that our seats are going to be like really good, like possibly hard camera right there on TV, like the first raise section. That's what I'm told. I don't get my hopes up until I'm there. We'll see. Should be fun. I'm looking forward to the Rumble this year. Hopefully they have some surprises up their sleeve, and we'll get into the predictions and all that next weekend. So I just wanted to let everybody know what was going on, and that's it. That's all I got. That'll be 420 and possibly 421. So until then, be well, stay safe, have yourselves a great week. And I will see you in Orlando next weekend for the Rumble. Until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Sala Monster sounds off.
Hulk Hogan's WCW contract splattered all over the internet. He got a $2 million signing bonus, 25% of the ticket revenue from all Nitro and Thunder events that he appeared on. He also got $20,000 per month for as long as he was part of the NWO, 50% of the profits from any Hulk Hogan merchandise that was sold, and a minimum $675,000 for any pay-per-view he appeared on. You know what I say? I say good for him. If I could get that kind of deal for myself, if somebody wanted me that badly, they were that stupid, then great. Always ask for what you feel you're worth. Your boss should have the guts to say no. WCW wanted to blow this guy so badly, they put a towel down on the floor so they wouldn't get rug burned.
Sala Monster sounds off.
Since 2007, the Sala Monster sounds off. Available at thesalamonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Sala Monster sound off.